Then we're going to get our discussion. Okay. All right. This is the facilities report actually from Dale Kreitler from NSLS2, but he couldn't be with us. So he asked me to show you his slides. Okay. But to prove to you that I'm entitled to do that, if you can see my mouse, that's me in the corner of that picture. All right. NSLS2 has two high data rate beamlines. One is FMX, one is AMX. Okay. They are both quite heavily used. They are both right next to each other. AMX gives a wavelength range of 0.7 to 2.5 angstroms. FMX gives a wavelength range of 0.4 to 2.5. The flux at AMX is slightly higher. The beam size at FMX is considerably smaller. AMX makes do with an Eiger 9M. FMX uses an Eiger 16M. We are drinking from a fire hose. 2 to 30 terabytes per day per beamline. It's going to get worse. From stuff that was put into use 4 years ago. And data rates are only going to increase. We're not there yet, but our objective is to get to, for say AMX, 1,000 structures a day. Okay? That is our objective. We're going to get there soon. Okay? This gives us challenges with data storage, transfer processing, and backup. And this certainly needs advanced software and the computing cluster. We have moved heavily towards raster-based centering of everything. If we see it, we raster it unless there's a reason not to. Okay? It really does work. It is workable. When you are working with small beams, it is the prudent thing to do. It saves you from missing important sources of data. I get my slide into work here. Okay. Vector scans are, of course, important. They are done. This is, really, really important. But what we found is that combining the rastering with the vector concept works very, very well. Every raster is a vector. Raster center everything. We vector collect by row. So even though we want to go at some diagonal, we simply do very quick raster scans and pick up those things that we wanted on the diagonal as we pass them. It's much faster, okay? We have a server, LSDC server. It generates Dozer input files based on the metadata from the database request object, and Dozer processing is triggered on the remote node, okay? We use Dectris Negia. We also use Eiger to CBF for some things. We can reprocess with dials fine spots. We use the file writer interface. We're not using the stream. We're using file writer. It's not perfect. It's perfectly reasonable. I'm not going to try and show you that movie. Basically, you can watch it. Raster scan. The raster queuing is simple because it is a thing we tend to do all the time. It's basically push a button, click on four spots on the image, and your raster is ready. It's going to be queued. It is going to run. The infrastructure that we need for this is a lot of nodes, and we will need more. Well, at the moment, 23 compute nodes, GPFS storage, close to a petabyte of GPFS storage, and SSD buffer. That last little thing, the SSD buffer, that is the critical thing. If you're drinking from a fire hose, you cannot wait for disk arms. So it's really, really important for the stuff that you're doing that is live, where the fire hose is blasting at it, be solid state memory, not hard disks. Then you can transfer at your leisure from there, during your downtimes. You have the usual assortment of workstations, data backup, okay? It's perfectly reasonable. Yeah, no's a perfectly reasonable. They're overloaded. Whatever amount of computing you've got, you need more. What amount of storage you've got, you need more. We're lucky right now to be able to hold about a year's worth of data. We are constantly cleaning up. We certainly could not hold 5 to 10 years of data in our current budget. Not feasible. Okay. There is the typical network infrastructure. I don't know how many of you remember at the beginning the discussions about doing things first over 1 gigabyte networks and then maybe over 10 gigabyte networks. We settled down fairly early to 40 gigabyte network, discovered that's too slow, and moved very quickly to InfiniBand for most of it. It's, yeah, InfiniBand is a major lifesaver, and the difference between 40 and 56 matters. And there are higher speed things you can do as well. It is well worth doing. I don't think I have, you know, have anything magical to say as to how you make all of this work. But you really do need to dump a lot of computing resources in. We do use Mongo. Mongo does work. Non-SQL does work. But there's a but. If you want to maintain the integrity of your database, you have to be very, very careful with non-SQL and combine multi-reader, multi-writer. It's not that there's something wrong with the design. It's what you're using it for. If you really do want to make use of something that is going to be a huge multi-reader environment with several writers, at some point you have to adopt the commercial approach of you use an SQL database for the stuff that needs to be interlocked for multi-reader, multi-writer simultaneously, and move the massive multi-reader out to a separate non-SQL data warehouse. You can't use non-SQL in an environment where you must maintain what's called referential integrity unless you want to lock the entire database on every transaction. And that kills all the speed advantage of NoSQL. It just won't work. Okay? So at some point, you're going to have to divide. As you're drinking from the fire hose, if you want to, you know, toss in more things, monitor this, change that, et cetera, you're going to have to switch over to the commercial model, which uses an SQL database for the stuff that needs absolutely reliable local interlocking instead of global interlocking, and use the NoSQL for the stuff that is the huge multi-reader. You really have no choice on that. All right, where is my slide? Thank you. All right, the database statistics of our collections. Number of experiments, you can see it's mainly raster, okay? A little bit of vector, a little more of snapshot type stuff. It's mainly raster for us. And I think as you go to smaller beams, you will find raster is highly desirable. Okay. Average number of rows is moderate. That's mainly because of the experiments we are currently doing. At some point, you probably will want the capability to go to something, you know, finer, larger number of rows. Okay. The length of the vector collections, again, is moderate. You're talking things, you know, a vector of 120 micrometers is about where you need to be. Okay. It's not an easy environment in which to work. Okay. You need tools. You need good tools. One of the best tools that we use for inline processing is we take FastDP from Diamond. That's a very, very good tool. And we're able to use it very, very quickly in FastDP interfaces to XDS. and it does a very reasonable job. For things when we have more time, we're doing post-processing, we use things like AutoProc. But in the course of the collection, right in the middle of the collection, we're running FastDP and Dimple. Okay, you know, on the fly. The timing with FastDP has gotten better over the years. Okay, it is certainly dependent on the number of reflections. At 500,000 reflections, we have trouble staying below 45 seconds. We are well below 30 seconds at you know, when we're less than 100,000 reflections. It is a good, useful tool. It's making the right trade-offs in terms of how much of the data to look at. And gives us very, very good, quick indications of whether a particular crystal, a particular spot on a crystal, is good data or bad data. And one of the earliest segregations we have to do is on space group. And it provides exactly that information very, very promptly. Okay. Our to-do list. In line, we need to do indexing and clustering, detection scoring multiple lattices for improved heat maps. Offline, additional pipelines. We are already using AutoProc and Dials. And post-processing, we are heavy users of CAMO. CAMO is not something to be using in the middle. We are doing a lot of serial crystallography. Take it in, sort out what you got after the fact. CAMO is very, very helpful for sorting. And we are starting, of course, like everybody else, on the model building. I've been using Phoenix for some time, and we've been using Rosetta. And I expect everyone is going to be moving to the model that we're certainly looking at of collect the data, and as fast as possible, get the best model that you can out of the PDB with a cell search, and get the best model that you can out of the AI engines, and try and do an MR. It's where we're headed. I suspect that most people are going to be headed in the same model, and it's going to get to the point where we are very likely to be seeing in our 1,000 structures a day something approximating 80, 90% of them that have usable data solved before the end of the day. Okay, let me see what else I got here. Dale made a nice set of slides. Okay, considerations for the future. Same problem that everyone else is having. How to keep pace with throughput without compromising quality. Wealth of new information, but avoid analysis paralysis, right? We need to consider the question of how much automation, how much manual. The reality is, at these rates, less and less can be manual. Okay? We have to allow for new types of experiments. We are getting reasonably into exploring clustering, dynamics, time resolved, etc. And we're looking at dynamics both in terms of the stuff that just happens and the stuff that's pump probed. Okay, we have to work out how we're going to use the tools. And you really need to look at the precision as well as the accuracy of your sample stage of goniometers, and you need stable optics. As the detectors get faster and faster, you're going to see every jiggle. There have been times when we sat there staring at exactly how the beam is bouncing. Every little jiggle matters. Okay. And here are our acknowledgments. A lot of people to acknowledge, the large cast of characters who work there, and software. We definitely have to acknowledge Dozer. It is very, very helpful to us. It does things at times that other things won't do. Barenkov and Popov's algorithm finds things that we are not finding, for example, with Dials. It matters. and FastDP. We use it all the time. We use it continuously. We use it in several flavors. Graham and friends have done a marvelous job in creating this. We couldn't live without it. Let me stop at this point and say thank you and ask for any questions. I see raised hands, but I don't see where they are. Could the one of the raised people unmute your mic and just talk?
It's John here again, so somebody else have a go. I've asked a couple already.
Oscar, you got a raised hand or a what? I can't tell what that is.
Yeah, no, it's raised hand. And I just wanted to ask about the molecular replacement and automation aspects.
Yeah, could you speak up a little?
Yeah, sure. So regarding the molecular replacement aspects, you mentioned automating this. And are you already requiring users to provide sequences of what they collect on? Or you mentioned that you have Dimple, for example. I guess then it's just a PDB file, but do you also take user sequences?
All right. Most users have a sequence. But true story, we have had structures where the sequence the user thought they had wasn't the sequence of what was collected. So you have to maintain a certain flexibility and skeptical nature. I'm not allowed to say exactly which user, which data set, but what really happened is that a contaminant in the crystallization turned out to be the crystal. So yes, most users have a sequence, and most of the time the sequence is right, but you need to be fast on your feet and ready to handle the case of that's not what we just collected. Especially now that we're dealing with thousands to tens of thousands of crystals. Things come along, you cluster them, and you discover things segregate. And basically, you're doing something that's more equivalent to a mass spec experiment than crystallography.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions?
Well, John, I think it's yours, question, Herbert. There is an overarching principle here, which is in effect, to be blunt, slave to the speed. And I would just note that if you think about the COVID-19, the Polish group task force on checking reproducibility and precision of different structures in the database, their papers, two of them, refused to analyze the pan-DDA depositions from Diamond. Because they argued that there was no, and presumably argued with the editor and the referees about it, there was no way to effectively evaluate such a large number. And then secondly, in terms of the pipelines being cryo, then Haller 2004 PNAS is saying that from the physical chemistry point of view, low ligand occupancy are low temperature artifacts. So there's a different type of compression requirement here, which is not computer science. It's what we can share reproducibly. I don't know how to affect that in terms of how things are done on the beamline, but I put it out there for you and others to munch on. It's probably the after lunch discussion, really.
Right. Well, we certainly should include it in the after lunch discussion. I have to say, I personally believe Vladek is wrong. And we can discuss that and the reasons why I think he's wrong when we get to the discussion. But now, for everyone's edification and delight, it is the lunch break. We will resume in my time at 7:15. In Prague time at 1:15 and in English time at 12:15. Okay? And once again, I will stop the recording while this is going on in case people want to make use of the Zoom window for a chat of some kind that they don't want recorded. you are welcome to make use of it. Okay. So let me just kill the I would if it would let me. Stop sharing. Okay. Stop recording.